The next prodigious tidal wave to strike Italy and recede was Goethe himself in 1786. He was 37 years old, and he was, among other things, a great political administrator at the head of a local government. But he thought, and he truly thought, it was better to be nobody in Rome than somebody in Weimar. He thought that. And early one morning, he took off, without a word of explanation, apology, without seeking extended leave or any leave. He madly changed his name to Müller, hurled himself into a stagecoach, and departed for Italy at tremendous speed. Even there was a pre-connection. German painters of the 18th century, they'd already founded a colony in Rome, hopeful that the sunshine would burst out of their canvases too. Somehow, it didn't. For some reason, it just failed to do that. But the point is, my point is, that they were there to acquire technique, not just a suntan. And Goethe himself took lessons from them in painting and drawing, and he spent much of his time in Italy in writing an opera libretto. And he did much more than just send postcards home. Whole sackfuls of letters, diaries, and poems from Italy fill whole volumes of his complete works. And that speaks volumes, too, for his intentions. What's he there for? This point is seldom made, but Goethe was seeking, above all, in Italy, knowledge. And not just self-knowledge and not just artistic knowledge, but objective scientific fact. That's what he was seeking. That's what he went to Italy for, rather like Mozart. Just like Mozart, in fact, technical know-how, basic information about his subject. He's hardly got into his stagecoach before he starts noting the direction and the force of winds in Italy, the location and description of clouds in Italy, the chief characteristics of Italian regions and populations. In the crater of Vesuvius, he acquires a Neapolitan indifference to lava. Europe nearly lost its greatest poet while he gathered geological specimens. The League nearly lost its founder and its finest lyricist. And he acquired new techniques and new knowledge anywhere. He acquired new poetic and indeed he acquired new amorous techniques in his new life. He beats out the rhythm of the classical hexameter on the back of his Italian girlfriend. In the act of composing his new and outspoken love poetry. That's Italian too. And he finishes by seeing the whole world with new eyes in a new light, in the genuine amazement of discovery. He became an authority on optics, the science of light. He sees colours typically as, and this is Italian, he sees colours as the sufferings and the emotions of light. Marvellous way of describing colour. He, among many similar observations from Italy that stay in the mind, are what he said about a room full of marble statues in a museum. He said, I feel as if they were forces of nature. As if suddenly he was surrounded by trees, and trees and statues were somehow the same sort of thing. He said in letter after letter, in many different ways, supreme works of art, he said, are essentially great works of nature, because we are works of nature. The artist obeys natural laws. Humanity and beauty are an integral part of the universe. That's what he said. And in saying that, he mystically anticipates similar beliefs expressed by the great lead composers. Schubert, Schumann, Brahms, and Wolf all left documentary evidence of what you might call their religion. And that was it. And in many cases, the only one they had. But they expressed those quasi-religious ideas in their own art forms. And so did their other great poet, Heinrich Heine. He was also a tremendous devotee of Italy and its power to illuminate and ripen humanity. He too described the powerful, perhaps better than anyone, the powerful and passionate longing of the northern or western mind for the sunlit lands of the south and the east. Ein Fichtenbaum steht einsam. Famous poem, the memorable image of the fir tree, half asleep and covered in snow, sort of Anglo-Saxon type, okay? Yearning for a passionate southern counterpart, the palm tree, says Heine, isolated, also alone under a burning sun. The Fichtenbaum yearns for the palm. And that's what exactly what the Nordic introvert needs, I reckon. Needs to be taken out onto the piazza and chatting people up in the sunshine. Needs to go and sit next to somebody on a bus instead of looking for the empty seat at the other end of the at the other end of the top floor. To be the feeling to be being less isolated, to be woken up and thawed out like that fir tree. That's fun. And that's why, hence, I mean, that's why the English invasions of the 19th century of Italy actually took place. Byron, Keats, Shelley and the rest. You think of them, don't you, as romantic, open-hearted romantic poets. They weren't. They were icy introverts who went to be thawed out. Even Browning, who wrote, "Open my heart and you will see, graved inside of it, Italy," he said. Well, that seemed to all his compatriots who stayed at home a bit unpatriotic. Italy? That's what he said. It seemed to go a bit far to the rest of the English.